I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show on CBS Audio Network, and I welcome my colleague and friend, Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. In the news these last days, the supply chain backup caused by an accident in the Suez Canal, a very large container ship wedged sideways for some hours, holding back traffic that needs to go on to the Mediterranean and to Europe, but also causing supply chains that will continue for weeks, I'm told, because of those empty supply ships that will not have material waiting for them on the docks and will not be able to get to their next episode. All of that reminds us that everything is connected. So Gregory is here to help us understand how that incident in the Suez Canal, which eventually brought the voice of President Sisi to comment on the success of freeing that vessel, how that incident illustrates the critical nature of this part of the world, which Gregory identifies as not just Egypt, but all of Northeast Africa along the Red Sea. So the Suez connected to the Red Sea, connected to the Arabian Gulf, connected in the Indian Ocean. And the large frame for this is the Red Sea Wars. Gregory, a very good evening to you. My learning from you is that Egypt is a driver in the conflict that we see between Somalia and Ethiopia. My learning from you is that Ethiopia is much derided these days by European voices, by American voices, for its conduct during the recent fighting and present civil war in Ethiopia to do with the Tigray Popular Liberation Front. So, how is Egypt's conduct in these last days either illustrative or complicating the situation in Ethiopia? Can we connect all those dots? Good evening to you, Gregory.
Good evening, John. Yes, the dots are all very connectable. And in fact, the civil war in Ethiopia is very much fostered by and a product of not only internal issues which were related to the communist governance of the country from, say, 1974 until basically 2018. But Egypt has been really fostering that war, funding and arming some of the dissident groups, not just the Tigray Popular Liberation Front, which is communist, but also the Oromo Liberation Front. These are secessionist, extremist groups. The TPLF was governing the country from about 1990 until 2018, so they had a chance to amass huge amounts of money before their government collapsed from the weight of its own incompetence and the death of its former Prime Minister, Meles Zenawi. But the reality is that the TPLF went into opposition, not even really supporting the people of Tigray province, but basically as a small Marxist extremist group with a U.S.-funded and U.S.-trained militia in the tens of thousands, waging war against the government of Ethiopia with the support of Egypt, because Egypt's goal has always been to see a weak or broken-up Ethiopia so that a powerful Ethiopia could not control the headwaters and flow of the Blue Nile, which is the life source, if you like, for the Nile flowing down into Sudan and Egypt. Now, the reality is that this is a pretty sort of misplaced strategic priority for Egypt, because there has not, in fact, been a threat to the Nile waters, probably ever, but there has been mismanagement of the Nile waters by Egyptian governments over the years, resulting in the present problems which Egypt has today. But notwithstanding that, you have this popular outcry that anyone tampering with or influencing Nile water flows must be an enemy of Egypt, and therefore is its casus belli, a cause for war. In reality, President El-Sisi does not really endorse this view, but he's being swept along because there are no other options at this stage. So we've got the Egyptian government trying to push the Sudanese government right at this stage into attacking into Ethiopia and, if possible, seizing the territory when this new big hydroelectric dam, the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, is being completed. this is unlikely to be successful, but the Sudanese army is going along with it because now the Sudanese army sees that if they can take that kind of initiative, they can also regain control of Sudan itself, bearing in mind that the Sudanese government collapsed a couple of years ago, and an interim civilian government is now in place. But the Sudanese military is unrepentant, and they want back in power. But in all of this, what's illustrative of the importance of the Suez Canal itself, which is the vital linking point for the Red Sea, Suez, Mediterranean sea lane of communications, is the fact that the grounding for 6 days of the 100,000-ton motor vessel, 220,000-ton, rather, motor vessel, the Ever Given, it shows just how easily Egypt's strategic core can be attacked. This is, in a sense, to Egypt, what electricity is to the United States. If you turn off the lights through cyber warfare in the United States strategically collapses. If you close the Suez Canal for a protracted period, Egypt goes into strategic less than relevance, shall we say. And, of course, remember the last time that the canal was closed in itself was for something like 8 years following the Six-Day War, and that crippled Egypt. In 1984, the Libyan government just had to drop three Italian magnetic mines into the Red Sea, one of which exploded, and that caused sufficient alarm so that the Suez Canal was effectively closed for some months because shipping companies were afraid or were having to pay too much insurance to transit the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. So if Egypt continues to threaten Ethiopia, Ethiopia can equally say to Egypt, look, you attack us and we will attack your, if you attack our main infrastructural item, which is the dam, we will attack the Suez Canal. And that can be done. And so we're not talking about the balance of power in military terms, in which favors Egypt. Strategically, Egypt would have to really be on its would have to perform in ways which it cannot to protect the Suez Canal. So the this incident, this 6 day incident with the motor vessel Ever Given, which cost about $10 billion a day to world trade and about $15 million a day just in port in canal transit fees to Egypt, that could be that could turn into a massive disaster. If it becomes an element of the war between Egypt and Ethiopia.
I mentioned the Ethiopian conflict is not resolved, but in your most recent article, you identified decisions that are being made, have been made, in order to rearrange the troubles having to do with Eritrea being suspect of having perpetrated or is accused of perpetrating war crimes. One of the things that came to me was that current Eritrean army generals will be forced into retirement. Does that answer the question about the conduct in Tigray to retire those generals?
No, that would be a misreading of it, and one which would be a popularly accepted view from outside. The reality is that the allegations of improprieties or war crimes by Eritrean and Ethiopian troops in Tigray were put out by the Tigray Popular Liberation Front information officers in Washington in particular, and have been basically accepted by the international media because they have not had direct access and because Prime Minister Abiy of Ethiopia has not understood how to play the information game. This really reflects a situation paralleling the breakup of Yugoslavia when the Serbs were completely outmaneuvered in the information game and were being persecuted. So the reality is that the TPLF hopes to so completely gain the trust of the international community that the victim will be the Ethiopian government. Now, what the Ethiopian government and Eritrean governments are now doing to respond to this is we are now going to see something which horrifies the Egyptians because it will restore the unity of Ethiopia as it was before the death of Emperor Haile Selassie. And that is, we'll see Ethiopia, the rump of Ethiopia, and Eritrea rejoin in a federation. And the removal of some Eritrean generals is not so that they to punish them. Rather, it's to bring the Ethiopian armed forces into a union with the Ethiopian armed forces as a precursor to a new federalization of Ethiopia, which will give Ethiopia once again, the thing that it had until 1974, access to the Red Sea. It will become a major sea power. Now, 2 years ago, Prime Minister Abiy contracted with the government of France for assistance in the help to help rebuild the Ethiopian Navy, which has not really existed since 1974. They also brought in the old commander of the Imperial Ethiopian Navy, Commodore Tasu Desta, out of retirement in the United States, and he's gone back to advise on this as well. And what we might see now is Djibouti coming into that federation, because Djibouti historically was part of the Greater Ethiopian Empire, leased to France in the late 19th century, just in the same way that the new territories and so on in southern China were leased to Britain in the 19th century. So the reality is we could see the Greater Ethiopia coming back with a vengeance, which, of course, it absolutely is contrary to what the Egyptians have been pushing for. And in the meantime, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, among others, are supporting this Greater United Ethiopia because it will give stability to the lower Red Sea security. And Ethiopia, of course, has strong relations with Israel. So Israel's not going to want to choose between Egypt and Ethiopia, but it may act as a broker to achieve an Ethiopia, Greater Ethiopia, Egyptian rapprochement. Because if they do that, they can solve the Nile water problem. They can also build a great economic union coming from the Mediterranean down to the Indian Ocean, which would have profound economic prospects, which would transform that whole region and international trade.
Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, commenting on the Red Sea Wars, this critical part of Africa, as we've seen over these last days, because of the Suez Canal incident. We're going to turn to major decisions being made in the cabinet in Australia, having to do with the reorganizing of Australia, Canada, and New Zealand, and the United Kingdom, and also with an understanding of the aggression from the People's Republic of China needing an answer in the Indian Ocean and Pacific. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show.